Did the High Warlock really give you that axe?
It was a long time ago. I was a captain of the guards, fighting for the Forest Kingdom and its border war with Hillsdown. It was a messy little war, and no good came of it, but I was in the right place at the right time, so I ended up a hero. King John knighted me, and the Warlock made me this axe. It's a good axe. Its edge never dulls, and I haven't found anything yet that can even mark the metal. More importantly, the blade cancels out all offensive magic in my vicinity. All in all, it's some axe, which is probably why I've stayed alive so long at Castle Midnight.
Jordan looked at Gawain thoughtfully. The border war had come to its inconclusive end some 36 years ago. If Gawain had been a captain then, that would put him in his late 50s now, at least. For a man that age, he was in extraordinarily good shape. He was also extraordinarily modest. Kings don't knight commoners for simple acts of bravery. Whatever Gawain did, it would have to have been very impressive. And yet there had been something in Gawain's voice all the time he'd been speaking, a quiet edge of bitterness, for no good reason he could name, except perhaps his actor's instinct for truth and fallacy. Jordan suddenly felt he could trust this man.
Tell me the truth. What exactly have I let myself in for, Gawain? Can I trust these people I'm working for?
Gawain said nothing for a long time, staring out over the moor.
You're being paid a great deal of money. Do your job well, and keep your eyes and ears open, and you'll walk away from this a rich man. That's all you need to know.
Jordan waited a while, but the knight had nothing more to say. Jordan watched him thoughtfully. It wasn't difficult for him to read the tension and frustration in Gawain's stance. The knight wasn't necessarily lying to him, but there was certainly a great deal he wasn't prepared to say straight out.
Gawain, you swore an oath to protect Prince Victor. You even followed him into exile from the court, and followed him back to Castle Midnight when most of his other supporters wouldn't. Now you're risking your life to help put him on the throne? What's he really like, Gawain? Roderick's been giving me Victor's life story till it's coming out of my ears, including everything he's said and done from the cradle onward, and everyone he's ever known, but I need more than that. What kind of a man is Victor?
Gawain looked at Jordan for the first time. His gaze was steady, but tired.
Victor is the best of a bad bunch. Louis is vile, Dominic is insane, and Victor has been badly used. His brothers plotted against him, the woman he loved betrayed him, and he spent most of his life trying to be something he was never suited to be. You keep calling him a villain, but he isn't. He's done deplorable things, yes, but only because in some matters he is too weak and easily led. As the son of a minor lord or baron with lesser responsibilities and burdens, he might have done quite well. But he never had the strength of character or purpose to be a successful Prince of Redheart. He lacks the pragmatic, ruthless nature that such a position demands. Of all the three princes, Victor is undoubtedly the most human. He's made fewer enemies than anyone else at court, but then he's also achieved the least. He's brave enough when he has to be, and I've taught him everything I know about the sword and the axe. He's killed 7 men in duels, and I've never once known him to back down from a quarrel.
Weak, easily led, lacking strength of character, and this is the man you want to make king?
The way things are, he'll either be king or he'll be dead, and all his followers with him. And as king, he should be better advised.
You're being very careful with your words, Gawain, but you're still not telling me what I need to know. Do you like him, Gawain?
I'm his friend, I suppose. He listens to me sometimes. He has a good side, a noble side. I try to encourage it when I can. I swore to his father that I would protect Victor as best I could for the rest of my life.
Why? What made you swear such an oath to King Malcolm?
Now you ask too many questions, actor.
Yes, I know. One of these days it'll get me into trouble just doing my job, Gawain. If you're uncomfortable, we'll change the subject. What do you know about that barrow over there? When I was nearby, I felt like I was intruding on something ancient. Are there any local legends about it?
Gawain studied Jordan for a disturbingly long moment. There was a cold calculation in his eyes, and Jordan carefully kept his smile open and disarming. Gawain finally turned away to look at the barrow, and Jordan breathed a silent sigh of relief. For whatever reason, it was clear the knight wasn't prepared to talk about his oath or the reasons behind it. It was also clear to Jordan that if he'd tried to press the point, Gawain would almost certainly have knocked him down. He casually moved a step farther away from Gawain and turned his attention to the great mound of earth that marked the barrow.
Boromir, it's very old. Some histories claim it was here even before Castle Midnight was built on Brimstone Hill. Boromir got its name from the time there was a great lake here. That's long gone now, together with quite a few other landmarks, wiped out during a sorcerer's war in the time of the Shadow.
His left hand made an instinctive warding sign against evil.
The barrow is a grave, of course, but it's no ordinary grave. That mound of earth you're looking at was built to hold something evil. Originally, there was a ring of standing stones around the barrow to keep the sleeper quiet. But one by one, they disappeared over the centuries. Stone for buildings has always been scarce in this part of the world. Now there's just the barrow itself left to hold bloody bones.
Who the hell's bloody bones? He sounds like a pirate in a bad mummer's play.
Gawain looked at Jordan, and the smile faded quickly from the actor's lips. Gawain nodded sternly.
Believe me, Jordan, there's nothing funny about bloody bones. Not if half the stories I've heard are true. Bloody bones is one of the old creatures, the transient beings. They say he was here long before the coming of man, stalking across the moors in search of prey, leaving a trail of bloody footprints behind him. He had no need for meat, but he lived on blood. When he walked the moors, the sun hid behind the clouds, and the air was full of the stench of the grave. No one knows who finally put him down and bound him in the earth, but he's lain in that barrow for God knows how many centuries, held there by spells and wards older than Red Heart itself. And still, he's not dead.
You're very well informed on the subject.
I collect old stories, a hobby of mine. I had hoped we'd not be coming this way. This is a bad place, even now.
I shouldn't worry about it. In my experience, there hasn't been an historian yet who wouldn't change or exaggerate the facts to make a better story. Uh-oh, was that thunder?
Huh?
For a moment, I was worried. What the? Gawain, the ground's opening up!
I can see that!
Jordan's breath caught in his throat as the huge earth mound shook itself apart. Loose earth ran down the sides of the mound like water, carrying with it clumps of displaced grass and heather. A jagged crack ran along the top of the barrow, widening and lengthening as Jordan watched. Something pale and indistinct appeared in the gap and clawed at the open air. It took Jordan several moments to realize he was looking at a huge, bony hand. Another hand appeared out of the widening crack, and the two hands sank into the crumbling earth and forced the gap open. The air grew cold, and the moor grew silent as the creature emerged from the earth and stood. He was 9 feet tall, and the light shone clearly between his bare bones. He was a huge, ill-formed skeleton, held together by ancient and awful magics that had no place in the rational world. Blood ran from his grinning jaws in a steady stream and fell down to splash on his chest bone and ribs. The bones were browned and yellowed with age and smeared with mud and grass from his grave, but still the main color was the horribly vivid red of freshly running blood. It dripped from his fingertips and oozed out from under his feet. It ran down his leg bones and welled ceaselessly from his empty eye sockets. Bloody bones had come forth from his grave.
Blood and Honor is continued on the next CD.